Alright, the time is 4 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. A very, very good morning to all the Eagle FM listeners, no matter where you are tuning in from. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we appreciate you for always following up. And of course, today is Monday, the 14th of 2025, and this is Early Morning Scoop, a program dedicated to diving into the latest update on economic entrepreneurship and public policy. Your host, Lois Ashimi. And of course, I'll be with you until the same time. That's now 7:30 a.m. Now, almost before I get into the international news segment, before, please be sure just to connect with us on social media platforms. That is Eagle FM Namibia on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn, as well as the Village Newspaper page on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And of course, do not forget to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel for the daily news update and of course the newspaper alerts. And please do not forget to download the Eagle FM app, and of course it's available on Google Play Store and Google Play, and of course the App Store, just to stay updated also wherever you go. And to start off internationally, is that the Kenyan farmers tend to indigenous seed variety to enhance food security. We might take a listen to this update.
Martha Njenga is leading a quiet revolution in her home village of Kamavadha in central Kenya. The farmer is teaching her neighbors traditional seed preservation methods.
Our group is called Mwigudhania. It has 50 members who store their seeds here. The members save their seeds and are able to access them when they want to replant.
The idea is simple. Every season, farmers store seeds suited to their environment. They return to them when the planting season begins anew. Already, they are beginning to feel the impact of this practice.
We used to depend on one type of crop. If you plant maize or beans, you can only harvest once a year. But indigenous varieties like arrowroots can be harvested all year round.
With the prices of commercial seeds rising, more farmers are opting for traditional seed varieties. Recognizing this shift, the Kenyan government has begun promoting innovations in agriculture. At a recent event, research institutes and agricultural organizations showcased climate-smart solutions ranging from improved seed varieties to digital tools.
We are working towards as scientists to ensure that those indigenous crops are improved and brought into the market so that the farmers will continue enjoying them in certified manner to ensure that you are guaranteed of the quality of the material. When you are planting, you know exactly what you are planting and you are guaranteed of it.
Since 2012, the sale of uncertified seeds has been banned under Kenyan law, a move aimed at protecting farmers from fake seed dealers. But this hasn't stopped farmers from organizing their own informal seed exchanges.
80% of the seeds that are used in growing our food coming from the farmers themselves. So if someone was to depend on commercial seed system to have all the farmers access seeds, it means we shall lose capacity to produce 80% of the food that we are producing.
With their seeds secured, these farmers are now looking forward to the rainy season, which is just around the corner.
All right, there you have it. Now moving on to Nigeria. Nigeria is turning it to its creative industry to drive economic growth and job creation. Now the sector already contributes $5.6 billion to the country's GDP. We might take a listen.
Based drummer Marcus Hassan has been posting his performances online since 2013. He now commands nearly 500,000 followers across various social media platforms, bringing in a steady income.
I post like once a month, you know, but then the traction, the constant views coming in from people, new subscribers, and, you know, new viewers keeps piling up, you know. But on a good day, if I post 2-3 times, I could make up to $1,000 a month.
The government wants to replicate this kind of success. Currently, the creative sector employs over 4 million Nigerians, but Nigeria wants to double that number within 3 years. Content creator Oluchi Anibogu says achieving that goal depends on targeted support.
As someone who holds interest in this particular field, I would like to know how you'd like to come in to help me, and, you know, how this would affect me personally and affect, you know, what I've managed to build or to plant.
Authorities say new investments in training, infrastructure and reforms are underway, but challenges like poor intellectual property protection and limited monetization options remain. Still, officials believe Nigeria's creative products already have international appeal.
We have a creative and cultural product that we can easily market internally. And also, considering the population of our country, we know that we have our own market. We also have the international markets who are seriously aching to participate or partake in our creative product. So it was a no-brainer, really, that the government would look at the sector as an important area to invest in.
Despite the challenges, Nigeria's creative space is brimming with opportunity. From music and films to arts, crafts and fashion, the world is already watching. As the country pushes to grow the industry through stronger policies and investments, content creators like Marcus and Oluchi are already proving its value.
Right, there you have it. The time is 11 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. We are continuing with the international news. Now, to move on to Zambia, Zimbabwe, Zimbabweans continue to stress to South African in search for job and admit the economic decline in their home country. Now, due to the factors such as economic sanctions, political instability and droughts, now scores of Zimbabweans nationals also close the border post in Musina, Limpopo, every day to buy essentials such as food, clothes and building materials. Now, the Border Management Authority says it continues to face serious challenges due to illegal migration. We might take a listen.
World Bank, the Zimbabwean economy recorded almost 6.1% growth in 2022 and 5.3% in 2023, but this was followed by a contraction in 2024 due to factors such as El Nino, lower prices for mining commodities. Many Zimbabweans said they've been experiencing severe economic challenges, forcing them to look to neighboring countries for jobs and food. The current political volatility has also compounded matters. Some told SABC News that they cross to South Africa every morning to search for menial jobs and head back home at the end of the day.
We can't say I like it. The United States as do not make us. We are good at jobs. So we just find like it. But what you have, and we charge according to like it. Small media.
I came here looking for a job. There are no jobs in Zimbabwe. Now I am selling ice cream because I am working for children back home. Everything there is expensive. We hope one day we will go home for good.
Cross-border transport operators say they are overwhelmed by customers who travel to South Africa daily to buy essential goods. They also say prices are skyrocketing due to low availability of necessities.
So the thing is, many people, they are working in South Africa because of shortages of jobs in Zimbabwe. Right? So me, I transport goods for the city to Zimbabwe. So it's only that I can't say I face much challenges because you know that the road needs money and stuff.
Yeah, in South Africa, all the good things, the prices are very favorable. very favorable. And most of the commodities, myself, I'm a cross-border trader. Foodstuffs and everything we buy in Messina. That's where we get very good prices.
Some Zimbabweans smuggle their goods bought in South Africa across the Limpopo River to avoid paying tariffs at the border. Border management authorities say they've also intercepted thousands of goods being smuggled to Zimbabwe through the river since 2023. They also arrest hundreds of illegal border jumpers on a regular basis. Rutendo Bobori, SABC News.
There you have it, listeners. Now to move on to the next item is that the United States has made its first significant concession to China amid the escalating trade war between the two nations. Now in a low profile announcement, the U.S. government revealed the certain electronic goods, including smartphones, computers, and semiconductors imported from China, will be exempt from the so-called reciprocal tariffs introduced by President Donald Trump. Now, this exemption spares those products from tariff that had been set at over 100%.
Bye, Kandi. Welcome to SA Today. Thank you so much for your time. So talk us through exactly how does a global tariff war directly affect South African exports and trade balances?
Good afternoon, happy Sunday. Well, this is becoming a much more complicated issue, I think, than we thought of. Mm-hmm. But it's especially important to not talk about global tariffs, because all the tariffs are usually levied between two countries, or at least between two trading entities, in the sense that, you know, South Africa, for example, will trade with Botswana. And so, you know, I'll be trying to buy trading with Mrs. Serame, who's in Botswana, and we'll be trading whatever we're trading. And then somebody, he would have ordered something from me that he has been delivered there. Now, the way that tariff works is that even though we might have agreed on a price of what that particular good is, when it arrives at the border of Botswana, the Botswanan government, if there is a tariff for that good, will then add on top of that the tariff, so that actually Mr. Serafi, who's that I work with, who I'm selling the product, has to now pay for that as they take them in. And what is important, therefore, is that if I had sold them the product at 100 rand, and there's a tariff of 25%, when he arrives at the port to collect he's bought from me, he must pay the 25 rand himself, and then he makes a good 125 rand, so that by the time it gets then to his shelves, it's 125 rand. Now, it's important, perhaps having said that, to understand why we have some of these tariffs. And there's been there are a number of reasons. But some of those that are easier, I guess, for us to understand in South Africa would include, for example, a tariff on wheat. Now, we have a tariff on wheat in the sense that when we import wheat, there's a particular amount of money that we put there. And that money is meant really to say we want to develop the local industry that clearly is being undermined perhaps by other trading partners. And then they take that tariff, that amount of money, and then what they invest in the sector, in farmers and all of those people, because they are saying that tariff is going to help us to actually develop the sector. Mm-hmm. There are other tariffs, for example, where they are trying to deal with unfairness or dumping. So many of viewers will know that there was a time where the South Americans, I think it was the Brazilians, were sending a lot of their chicken to South Africa, and they were sending what they call in-bone chicken. So mm-hmm. those would be thighs and wings and all of that. The parts of the chicken that we love. Mm-hmm. Because for them, they really prefer breasts for their chicken. Now, if you think about that situation, they're literally flooding the South African market with things that they don't want. and therefore would have devastated the South African economy. So what the South African government can do in that sense is to actually put a tariff to try and stop that or try and control that. So that's really how tariffs are supposed to work. And this is clearly not the situation there, because what we are dealing with now perhaps is not so much global tariffs, but the tariffs that America has implemented against its partners. And where the concern is for all of us is that then this becomes a war on tariffs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where basically a global tariff war would be, in the sense that everybody would be pushing back. And that has really, really serious implications.
Let's continue with your great layman analogy there, Kanti. I mean, for an even better understanding, which South African industries then are most exposed or susceptible to tariff hikes from major economies like the United States or China?
So it is clear those industries that obviously are very much dependent on exports.
Mm-hmm.
So we know, agricultural sector, for example, many people have talked about citrus. We also know, about our, motor manufacturing sector, for which South Africa actually invests quite a lot of money. And I think a lot of people know about some of the investments that goes into the motor manufacturing sector, where we actually export, to the U.S. Then there's a number of minerals that we export to the U.S. and so on and so forth. But I think what is also important is for us to understand that in an environment like this, where, you know, big powers such as China and the U.S. are fighting, one of the things that we, there was a time when people used to say, when the U.S. sneezes, the world catches a cold.
Mm-hmm.
We now know that China is also part of that kind of parallel. In the sense that the two of them fighting, you imagine, for example, that, you know, an Apple computer is designed in the UK, in the US. But then, you know, there are some parts of it that are collected in other areas of the world. Then it gets manufactured in China. And then it's redistributed. And it goes back, for example, to the US. So it was very clear that the price of an Apple computer will have to increase under these tariffs. But also what we have to know is that obviously the kind of sort of basing of these computers and all of that would have been, you know, what price you have in the U.S. Many people, for example, used to travel to the U.S. to buy an Apple computer there because it would have been cheaper. But it clearly, that price will also obviously affect others.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are other areas that are very, very important that can cause disruptions. Because remember, if you disrupt trade, you disrupt a whole system in which we work. And that can also affect us in terms of pathways to the rail network,
mm-hmm.
and all of those kinds of things. So really, those are the main, many, many challenges that we face. And I mean, I could go on for longer, but that would get to Monday morning.
Yes, and I mean, very smart of Trump. They're also exempting certain of those everyday electronic products that are mostly consumed by the people of the United States. They're kind of, but I mean, let's bring it back home. Could this tariff war then indirectly cause job losses or even price hikes here in South Africa? And how might then this tariff war directly affect South Africa's trade relationships within BRICS or even with the EU and the US?
Sure. And I think we can discuss this in two formulations.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is that, of course, South Africa has also been levied tariffs. I think because of that level, 10%, we're also now at that spot.
Mm-hmm.
But then the second part, we have to think about it like this. Let's just focus on the trade between the U.S. And China. Now, China.
Right, there you have it, listeners. The time is as 23 minutes in the of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to the next item is that the admit the rising political opposition, such as the South African's government is defending its black economic empowerment policy introduced in the early 2000s to address the apartheid era economic disparities. Now, we might take a listen to to this argument, actually, on this particular segment.
Had its roots in the late 1980s as apartheid was crumbling and South Africa's corporate sector looked for ways to avoid retribution under a future black-led government.
Investors come like Sanlam, the big insurance company. They were afraid that when a democratic, predominantly black government came into power, that they were going to be nationalized or somehow punished for collaborating with the National Party over apartheid. They feared that they were going to be punished. So they decided that they had to find a way of accommodating the black people so that they don't get punished for what they had done.
Retabili Ratsomo was just 8 years old when BEE was introduced. Her father, a vocal anti-apartheid activist, paid a heavy price for fighting the old regime. She believes race-based policies like BEE remain necessary to repair the damage done to millions of black South Africans.
My father was someone who was imprisoned in Robben Island twice after 1976. So it's something that a sense of justice is something that I grew up thinking of a lot. So BE is one of those things that came out of that fight for our greater liberation. And it's something that I think has worked for the broader black population as well.
The move was designed to increase black ownership of companies, build skills, and promote economic inclusion. But two decades later, critics say BE has created a new inequality, benefiting only a small politically connected black elite, while most South Africans remain trapped in poverty.
The South African government is not focused on the modernization of South Africa. It's not focused on the upliftment of the whole population of all the people of South Africa. It's focused on the upliftment of the African middle class rather than of the whole population. There's really only one way to uplift the people of any country. You have to educate your population.
And the pressure isn't just domestic. The World Bank and the United States has also raised concerns about BEE rules and how it affects investment and competitiveness.
It is an injustice not to address the historic discrimination of black people, the historic discrimination of women and their lack of participation in economic activity. But it's about building a country that's truly non-racial, because you become truly non-racial if all your communities have equitable access to opportunity, to prosperity, to wealth. That is a real non-racial country.
And these goals remain priorities. South Africa turned 31 as a democracy this year, but its economy still reflects deep inequality, most of it controlled by white minority, while many black South Africans, especially women, struggle with unemployment and a lack of skills. Getting rid of BEE policies isn't likely, but as South Africa's new unity government faces internal divisions, finding new ways to boost growth and real empowerment may be more urgent than ever. Julie Shara, CGTN, Cape Town.
All right, the time is 27 minutes in the office o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. So just on the last update of from the international side of it is that the farmers in the Somalia region of Ethiopia have traditionally relied on their livestock for their livelihood, as is the case in many parts of the Africa today. Now, they are finding that climate change has started to not only limit access to sufficient quantity of water, but also reduce the availability of grazing for their animals. Now, as temperature rise and rain level fluctuate or weather fall, less grass is also growing. Now, several successive drought in recent years have killed tens of thousands of cows, goats, and sheep, forcing many to reconsider the identity as herds. Now, as a matter of survival, with also support from the international or aid organization, including the AN UN World Food Program and some ethnic Somali farmers in Ethiopia have been able to transition from cattle herding to crop growing in area near their homes, that without outside help and of course funding. Now might still be desert. Community farmers also efforts have helped villagers feed the animals that have survived, growing new plants in greater quantities and also an extra cash at local market that in turn help improve living standard also. But on this also, inconsistent rainfall and of course flooding still threaten the success of the those adaptation projects, but not on nearly so much as the loss of substantial American funding. We might take a listen to this particular update on this.
It's in a 5-mile trek to the nearest river for water. But it alone cannot grow the grass his animals need. Unlike generations of herders before him in the dry Somali region of southern Ethiopia, his livestock are his livelihood.
We might hold on this just for to pay the bills.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low, because I donated blood.
Call NHB on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
But climate change has started to threaten this traditional way of life. Green fields like this were few and hard to find during the past 3 years of deadly drought.
The critical shortage of grass and water for livestock led to their unfortunate death due to hunger and diseases. As a consequence, my community faced substantial hardships and challenges directly because of the drought.
Across the Horn of Africa, tens of thousands of people died from hunger in recent years because of low rainfall. But in Ethiopia's Somali region, it was the death of some 2 million animals that made life so difficult for those that survived.
The well-being of my family is tied to our animals, particularly in the context of our livelihood. When one of our cows gives birth, it becomes a source of sustenance for my children. Losing an animal like that has direct implications, as it means my children no longer have access to this source of nutrition.
For a man who's relied his entire life on his own cow's milk, being forced to buy a powdered version for his children last year was a frightening first. Hassan told us he lost 15 of his 25 cows and almost all his goats and sheep.
If there's another drought, if you lose more animals, you can't get milk, you have less money. Is there anything you can do?
Certainly, I'm open to diversifying my activities beyond raising livestock, to include farming. Our perspective has shifted, and we're considering new possibilities.
The Somali people in this region have long strongly self-identified as herders. Now climate change is pushing some to abandon their cattle for crops.
There you had it, dear listeners. Now the time is 32 minutes in the office o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. You can take a listen to a very, or rather you can go into a very short commercial break, and then once you return, we'll take a listen to the local update. Do not go away.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So, not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who knows does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff. Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
All right, the time is 34 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock. And thank you so much for tuning in. This is Early Morning Scoop. And if you just joined us right now, thank you and a very good morning to you once more. Now, to start off, we'll start off with one of the headlines in our newspaper of today. Please don't forget to just subscribe or rather just send through your details to 081-241-44. That's the number you can always save, and of course you can able to get the newspaper every day. It's released. That's now Monday, Wednesday and Friday. Monday, Wednesday and Friday, you can able to get the newspaper. Now to start off is that the Harrail project remains in conceptual stages after 7 months of inactivity. Now these dual four hydrogen diesel locomotive initiative intended to be empowered by Namibian green hydrogen was suspended in September of last year. Now the temporary halt followed the Development Bank of Namibia and the Development Bank of Southern African approval of Trust Namib's request for a $2.6 billion loan. And now this funding was meant to upgrade its fleet and support the company's ambitions plan. Now, according to the media release dated September 11, 2024, regarding the green hydrogen dual four locomotive project, Trust Namib affirms that the project is still on hold, that what the executive commercial and of course the marketing manager at Trust Namib said. Now the manager also explained that the suspension stems from a shift in the company's strategy development goals. Now that he said the focus is now on a core business operation to effectively execute our 10 round strategy for the Trust Namib. That's what he said. Sorry. Now, despite previous expectations that the GH2 or rather green hydrogen empowered locomotive could be operational by April of this year. Now, we are now in the second week of April with the project still on hold. Now, the project was originally projected to take 18 months with trial operational schedules to begin in the fourth quarter of the 2025. Now, it includes the concession of two locomotive to use hydrogen in internal combustion engines and the construction of a hydrogen fuel storage car. Now the traction rail hub in the South Africa was also designed to build and of course modify the prototypes of before Trust Namib relocated from the Wavre's Bay to operational startup. Now it in collaboration with partners, including Hyphen Technical, the CMB, the TAC Trust Namib, the University of Namibia, the TAC Shen funding was also scheduled to the proposed, that's now the 7.6 euro million hydrogen locomotive initiative, now known as the HERO Namibia. Now, the Institute for Public Policy Research has characterized the project post as a strategy of realignment, enabling Trust Namib to concentrate in its limited resources on providing higher quality rail transport services. Now, Trust Namib committed to initiating preparatory phase during this halt, which will help the peninsula develop a comprehensive strategy balancing its decarbonization goals with its core objectives. Now, many stakeholders believe this decision is prudent for Africa's pioneering hydrogen train project. Now, a peninsula in a vulnerable position might find the risk associated with being a first mover to burdensome. Now, taking time to reevaluate Trans-Namibia's operation and develop a transition strategy might yield better results than what they said. Now, when asked for a comment, Jonah Musheko, manager for external affairs and, of course, communications at the Namibia Green Hydrogen Project, confirmed that the consortium has kept green hydrogen programs informed about the ongoing status of the project. Now, that what the article said. Now, to move on to the next item is that Saki Kathindi, the newly appointed governor of the Oshikoto region, has committed to enhance agricultural productivity by providing farmers with access to modern equipment and, of course, resources. Now, Kathindi was formally welcomed into his role that was now the last week, Tuesday, after being appointed by the President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwa last month. Now, in his inaugural address, Kathindi emphasized agriculture as a key priority for his administration, noting its significance as the backbone of economic development in Oshikoto, which supports now about 85% of local farmers. He also assured residents that his administration would focus on delivering a targeted support to farmers, including modern equipment, higher quality seeds, and, of course, comprehensive training programs. Now, Kathindi also stressed the necessity of establishing a public abattoir in Oshikoto to add value to the region's livestock and create jobs. Now, we had the opportunity to just engage with Kathindi and learn more about how he plans to achieve those goals. We might take a listen.
On our next item, we will be in contact with the new Oshikoto governor, Saki Kathindi, who was welcomed to his new office on Tuesday. Now, Kathindi was appointed by President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwa on the 28th March of 2025. Now, during his welcoming speech, Kathindi highlighted the agricultural transformation, which will be his main focus. A very, very good morning to you, Mr. Kathindi, and welcome to the Early Morning Skip.
Yes, good day. How are you?
We're doing great.
Awesome.
All right. Yeah, I mean, just speak to us, or rather unpack this for us. Why did you choose agriculture as the main focus?
As I said in my speech, why did I choose agriculture as my focus?
Mm-hmm.
Agriculture is a backbone.
Okay.
Of everything, and 85% of our population in Oshikoto regions are farmers.
Mm.
That's our culture and that's our tradition. That's why I brought it in under the concept of food security.
Mm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, perhaps maybe also just to elaborate for us that how are you planning to execute your planning briefly?
Plans are underway. As you speak currently, you might even experience some network challenges. I'm in the region from Les myself,
okay.
From corner to corner. First and foremost is that you can't execute this novel task without water.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing that we have is our main focus and priority above priority is water.
Okay.
It's also a challenge.
Mm.
So we are back on that journey to see how we can execute this duty by at least seeing how we'll attend to the water shortage in the due course. The first thing is that One, you have to profile the region. That's what I'm busy with. So that I understand the pros and cons, what are the challenges, what are the way of doing things. But apart from that, the team, my predecessor has been here just for me to unpack what is really there, what is the way forward. But for us to achieve this, my other main area of focus is road networking.
Okay.
Yeah, because we have people that are living in rural areas, we need that feeder roads that might take, you know, connect also clinics and schools to the main roads. So that's one of my key area of focus. And then the third thing is communication.
Okay.
You need, once you have proper road networking, you need communication so that the auto business community can take service to the people. So that's why at the end of the day, we meet the government halfway. So at the center of our move is the key objective. It's only service delivery to the Namibian people and specifically Oshkoto residents. What I'm appealing to the Oshkoto residents is that we know the region, we have been here, we know challenges from all corners and angles of this region. Everybody knew what are the challenges. And then for us to achieve what we have to achieve, we need to unite, we need to hold hands. Let's put our hands together so that at least by coming together, I believe in consultation, I believe in teamwork, and the regional governor's office has an open door policy which I believe in. So let's put our brains together. Let's work together as a team. Let's have a collective decision at the end of the day to make Oshikoto prosper.
All right. Thank you so much, Honorable, for having you today.
Thank you.
All right.
Right, there you have it. Now, there you have it. Mr. Kathindi just emphasized that, I mean, agriculture is one of the backbone of the economy of the country, of course. And there, maybe just to add there, we also engage with Abner Shikulo, the chairperson of the Oshikoto Farmers Association. He just welcomed Kathindi's proposal for a local abattoir, stating it would significantly benefit farmers who face challenges related to transportation costs and, of course, distance to distant processing facilities. Now, if the governor's version is released, it will greatly aid farmers, allowing us to transport our livestock locally and encourage more individuals to engage in farming and marketing. That's what Shikulo said. Now, on the topic of horticulture, Shikulo highlighted the untapped potential of young farmers in the region, stressing the importance of providing them with adequate knowledge and resources to thrive. Now, he also pointed out that many farmers lack essential information about food security and, of course, successful agricultural practice. Now, Shikulo also raised concern regarding the lack of government tractors, which limits substances farmers ability to adequately till their land. Now, government tractors are scarce, and of course, many farmers are unable to plow all their land, resulting in unworked portions. Now, we urge the government to address this issue. The governor to address the issue that what he added. Now, to move on to the next item is that the mental health challenges are more prevalent that many realize. Now, in Namibia, the Ministry of Health has observed a steady increase in mental health cases with depression, anxiety, and substance use disorders among the most frequently reported condition. Now, Dr. Celestino Andrenu on one of the keynote speakers at the year's mental health awareness event hosted in Okongo. Wangwana Region noted that mental health issue can affect anyone, whether it's a family member, a teacher, a colleague, or a friend. Now, unfortunately, a stigma continues to pose a significant barrier to seeking help, often leading to untreated conditions that are negatively impacted impact individual well-being and productivity, education, and relationship. Now, raising awareness, breaking to the silence and promoting the treatment crucial steps toward building a mentally healthier Namibia. Now, our reporter Zafia Basuna spoke with Dr. Andrenu about this issue. We might take a listen to this particular update.
Mental Health Awareness Day was observed this week. This morning, we'll be speaking on mental health awareness. We are now joined by Dr. Adelino, a medical doctor at the mental health unit at Windhoek Central Hospital, who specializes in treating mental health conditions. Good morning, doctor. And thank you for...
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us on Early Morning Scoop.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Okay. Mental Health Awareness Day. I would like to ask you, doctor, what are the most common mental health challenges faced in our community and how can we best support those affected?
A lot of common mental health challenges that are facing our community. And today, there are a lot of mental conditions. We see some mental patients being neglected in our community. You find them roaming around the streets and they are not being helped by the people in the community. They are neglected. No one is taking care of them. These are some of the challenges we are facing. So we have common mental conditions. We have like schizophrenia. These are people who are not in touch with the reality. You see them sometimes roaming around the street. So people, they stigmatize them. They call them all sorts of names. They are crazy. No one is willing really to take care of this kind of people. That's a challenge we have in the community. And that's why we need to, we are doing awareness to sensitize the community in our society to know that mental illness is a kind of illness like any other type of illness that people go through, people encounter, and they need to be taken care of. So, and some of the common mental health condition we have currently, depression is one of the main current leading mental condition in our society today. A lot of people are going through depression and some of them are going to the extent of committing suicide because they keep to themselves and they are not seeking help. So there need to be awareness in the community so that people will know where to go for help. And then we have some type of mental condition that are caused by the use of substance. So that's why we are going about talking about the awareness, the effect of substance and alcohol, because people get mental condition because of the use of alcohol and drugs, and people's minds are affected, and they end up getting mental conditions. All this awareness we are doing so that people will know the bad effects of drugs. And how should we help those affected? If you see that there are family members that are mentally sick, we should refrain from stigmatizing mental ill patients. So we should be able to come in and help them as a community, as families, and bring them to the hospitals where they need to be helped.
Mm-hmm. How can families and friends recognize early signs of mental health issues, and what should they do to help?
So some of the early signs of someone going through a mental conditions are changes in behavior. There are sometimes a person that you used to know this the way they are, but you find this a certain change in their behavior. Maybe this person is not taking care of themselves anymore. They don't care about taking care of themselves. Someone who was maybe going out with friends, there's lots of interest in the things they used to do. They don't want to associate with other people anymore. They just want to remain in self-isolating themselves. And they want just to be in bed. They don't want to go to work. and there's lack of motivation to do things. So those are some of the signs we can see that the person might be going through a mental condition. And then what should we do as friends, as family members? So we need to approach this person and try to talk to them. And some of them, they can confide in us and tell us what they are going through, and they can tell you their problems. If we see people telling us like that, let's see how to bring them to the helping people. We have social workers, we have psychologists and doctors that can able to help them. Let's not keep quiet. If you see people, the behavior has changed, you have seen that something is wrong with this, my friend, it's not the way they used to be anymore. Sometimes the way they talk, all talking about negativity every time. So those are some of the signs, and then we need to connect them to the right people that can help them. The social worker in our community and the psychologist.
What mental health services are available and how can people access them?
There are a lot of mental health services available at the community level and the district level. First, our first responders are social workers. We have social workers in our community and in our hospitals. So they offer counseling if someone is going through depression. So they go for a social worker able to counsel them and see what is the cause of their depression and give them some coping skills how they can cope with the situation. If the social worker see that there's a need to refer to a psychologist, the psychologist will come in. So we have psychologists. Most psychologists we have mostly only in Windhoek, but we also have psychologists in Swakopmund. In the northern part of the country, I think it's only in private. We still don't have psychologists in state in the northern part, but yeah. And then we have a mental hospital in Oshakati, that's Ward 16. That's where these patients are admitted and they are treated and given medication. And then they need support, like family members. When someone is mentally ill, they need people that we call people that can offer support to these people, because some of them, they cannot take medication on their own, so they need a family support, someone who should be responsible to make sure that this person goes to the hospital for their follow-ups, this person is taking care of their medication for them to really stabilize, because many, we are experiencing people defaulting medication, they are not continuing their medication, then they are relapsing every time.
Mm-hmm. What role do traditional beliefs or practices play in how mental health is viewed or treated?
Yeah, traditional beliefs really affecting the way we handle our mental ill patients, because number one, it delays the intervention of medical personnel, because family, once they see someone is going through a mental condition, the first thing they do is to take the person to traditional healers. They have believed maybe this person is bewitched because of they believe in witchcraft, and then the person will not be taken to the hospital on time. They are taken to the traditional healers there, and then they try to do their things there, and there's no outcome that's really positive that the person will be healed. And before they come to the hospital, sometimes the condition is worsened and it's kind of like late. So these beliefs that we believe that someone is having mental condition, maybe someone has bewitched them, or maybe they did something that is wrong, then it's coming against them. All those are just myths that people believe in. Mental illness is a normal illness, like any other condition, physical illness. Once people are experiencing that, we are advising the community, the family, to really bring the patient to the hospital, because taking people to traditional healers, delaying people from receiving treatment.
Thank you, Dr. Adelina, for providing us with the insights and awareness on mental health. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you very much.
All right, there you have it, listeners. The time is 7 minutes in the off 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, on this again, on to move on to the next, is that this month marks World Autism Acceptance Month, a time when health professionals strive to raise awareness, foster acceptance, and of course, cultivate a social society that supports and empowers individuals with autism. Now, throughout this month, various organizations are hosting events and campaigns aimed at promoting understanding and inclusivity. Now, on Friday, therapists, health professionals, and parents convened in Ongwadiva, Oceania Region, just to raise awareness about the autism. And speaking with Eagle FM, Victoria Joel, director and principal of the Cycle of Hope Private Academy, COHA, underscored the importance of educating communities about autism, noting that a lack of understanding remains a significant challenge. Now, the campaign seeks to promote inclusivity and support for individuals living with autism. We might take a listen to what Victoria has to say on this regard. Yeah, well, a director and principal of Cycle of Hope Private Academy that COHA had to unpack this for us. A very good morning to you, Mrs. Joel, and welcome to the Early Morning Scoop.
Good morning, ma'am.
Thank you so much. I'm doing all good. Now, I mean, just to start off, what was maybe the aim of this awareness campaign, and what is maybe the importance of spreading the awareness among the public?
Us working with children with autism ourselves for the past 5 years,
mm-hmm.
We have realized that there is quite a very, very big need for us to spread awareness on this condition.
Mm-hmm.
And that is came with the engagement that we're having with the parents, the community, us being stigmatized as a school, even being called a school for dumb people. We came to the understanding that people don't have good comprehension of what autism is all about.
Mm.
And this is why we have organized, especially in the month of April, because April is the Autism Awareness Month.
Yeah, and for the parents and caregivers, what are maybe some of the signs of autism?
The signs can vary because autism is a spectrum, and it's not really, it's individual.
Mm.
So the symptoms can really, or the symptoms can vary from one child to another. But the most common one is that makes the parent worry is always the child is not talking at their age according to the normal developmental stage.
Mm.
3-4 years, the child is still not talking. Or the child is talking, but he's repeating what you are saying, which is what we call echolalia.
Mm.
Or the child has social interaction challenges, not playing with other kids, with other under the table.
Mm.
If he likes people, then he likes people too much, he doesn't know boundaries.
Mm.
If he doesn't like people, he can't stand crowds. It makes him have meltdowns where he can't even cope in a place where there's too many people. And then we have behavior challenges where they have, when they get excited, they are flipping their hands, they giggle with their imaginary friends and so on, which is now obviously something that is considered in the community for those that don't know autism.
Yeah.
They call it the child maybe is not even okay because why is he laughing with himself or why is he flipping hands? They also have sensory issues where they are sensitive to light.
Okay.
They are sensitive to noise.
Mm.
It's either they seek it or they avoid it, or it's too much for them.
Okay.
So those are the common symptoms of autism.
Okay.
And the other one, the most common one, is also the hyperactiveness. The child can just not sit for longer than 1 minute with up and down.
Okay.
And this is mostly observed also in schools.
What else maybe do you think that can also enlighten the public about the autism?
Well, I would say awareness, aggressive awareness, because this should be done in different languages.
Mm-hmm.
Because we did one and over 250 people attended. And this awareness should also just include everybody, not just the parents that are affected.
Mm-hmm.
Today, we made sure that when we extended our invitation, we included pastors. We included teachers, we included doctors, we included student teachers, We included the community members generally within the whole community of Oshana in the northern part, outside Oshana as well. So aggressive awareness, and if we could actually do it as a joint, in partnership with the Ministry of Gender, Ministry of Disability Affairs, it can reach the whole Namibia, because we could do it at the resource that we can, at the extent that we can, but if we do it in partnership with other stakeholders, and also not just do it in the month of April, we can extend it throughout the year, where we have once a month we are doing an awareness on the radio, on TV. Parents need to also, you know, share their life experiences. People with autism themselves that are able to actually talk about it, need to talk about it.
Mm.
People need to become aware so they get a different understanding about it.
Yeah, just before we close off, maybe just talk to us about the reaction. What are the parents, the caregivers are saying about the autism?
The reaction was the parents felt a sense of hope. In a sense that they could look around and realize they're not alone. They sense a lot of hope also in the doctors that were sharing their expertise on how these kids can still be helped and assisted with living with this autism spectrum. They showed appreciation for such a platform so that we can also educate other stakeholders that were sitting among us who sometimes misunderstood them and made it difficult for them as well. So there was a lot of appreciation and a lot of sense of gratitude from the public. The child is normal in their spectrum.
Mm.
There's nothing like abnormal. We are also normal in our own individual personality. So try to readapt in each other's world. As much as you want a child, an autistic child, to readapt in your world, you as a parent as well must try and readapt on how they communicate, how they express themselves. So we come to a common ground and be able to be inclusive in this society.
All right. Thank you so much, Mavictoria, for having you today.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right.
All right, there you had it from Mavictoria. She just emphasized that maybe a campaign or awareness will rather make people understand or the public understand about the autism. Now, on the same event, Topiwa Chimenza, a therapist, shared helpful tips for parents raising children with autism. We might take a listen to what she has to say on this.
The child knows what they want, they know what they want to say, they know what they want you to do, but they cannot put it across to you verbally. And because now you are not understanding them, and they are also failing to express themselves, that's when the behavior problems will come in. So if we manage to adapt to their environment, and we manage to introduce other ways of communication, it may not necessarily be sign language, but we can use picture communication, a lot of other techniques, gestures and all that we can use for the child to be able to at least tell us what is it that they want. Okay, like for an example, if you are in the house, you already know the things that a child will basically need. Juice, food, knickknacks, toys, whatever. So you can have your own array of pictures. A picture for juice, for the favorite food, the toys and whatever. And then you now teach your child, if you want juice, just carry this card and bring it to me. Then I will know. Then you will remove the behavior problems of the child. Every time they want something, they just start to cry, they start to kick around. You have to figure it out. And most of the time, you can't figure it out. You bring this thing, they will continue to make a fuss because it's not that thing. You bring the other one. So all these techniques that are like this example, that is now the role of occupational therapy. Because we are saying we want this child to be independent. We don't want them to be can also use their mind and cognitive functions to be able to communicate whatever they want.
Now, she further emphasized that it is crucial for parents to adapt their environment to their children and living with also the autism by learning their preferences and, of course, dislikes. We might take a listen to this update.
And as much as possible, remove the triggers. As long as it is possible to remove them, just remove the triggers. It's better to avoid the behavior problems than to manage them. So if my child does not like bright lights, then I will put dim lights. Even if it's in the night, let's have dim lights in the house. If the child does not like a lot of noise, then let's not use the vacuum cleaner, the blender, when the child is awake or the child is around. Okay? Because we're just going to trigger a behavior that will take us an hour to manage, but we could have just avoided that kind of behavior. So we need to adapt our environment. Like I have said, in as much as we are helping our child to be socially accepted, we have a lot of adapting to do also. We can not only have the child changing, we also need to change and understand that we need to do this differently so that we can be able to help our child. On the issue of communication, speak slowly and clearly. The problem of communication is both receptive, how they receive. They can have good hearing. It might not be an auditory issue, like they can't hear you. They can hear you, but how they are interpreting what they are hearing is different from what you expect. So if you rush with your words, it's going to be worse. So say it slowly and say it clearly. Also, they can hear you very well, but they will take time to process the information. So we need to be patient. Once you have given an instruction, the child can stand there as if they did not hear or understand. 3-4 minutes, and they'll go and do exactly what you said. So we need to adapt, because the normal thing for us parents is, if I say it and the child is standing there, I will repeat it. Now, if you repeat it, they are going to start processing again. So you are going to wait longer. So we just need to adapt. Okay, I will say it and give the child time to process. If then it goes beyond 5 minutes or so, then I will say, okay, maybe he did not understand. We ask the child, can I repeat? The child will respond, whether verbally or whatever, then you repeat the instruction and you will understand each other. Say things the way you need them. Don't use idioms, metaphors. Don't go around. Say what you mean, okay? And mean what you say, because they are going to take whatever you say literally. So say what you mean and give whatever. Because sometimes people can say, "What are you still doing there?" Or, "What are you still doing? You need to pull up your socks there." The child will go and pull up their socks. They will just go and pull up their socks. They are not understanding that you are saying you need to be serious and yes, and pick up your speed and whatever. So say exactly what you mean and mean what you say. Otherwise, you confuse the child as they are trying to learn how to communicate. Keep your instructions short. One thing at a time. Don't say, go to the kitchen and take that cup. When you are coming back, pass through the Just go and bring the cup. It's enough. Let the child bring the cup and come back. Yes. So keep the instructions short and one instruction at a time.
Right, there you had it. The time is 12 minutes in the hour of 7 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. We're going to go into a very short commercial break. Then once we return, we'll also take a listen to more of the local news before we cross off to the next program, that is Unpicking of the Day, exactly 7:30. Now we can go rather listen to a very short commercial break.
Omutiha with the Kirokaguna e Matina Omjo. Chikao Shafata Nana Longishifa Yaishuike Moshiwana. Iya Moyawa Ota Yungoti Samani. Anagashifa Yanamibia on the Jomba Nawa Onjika. Seitanina Omayaguro Nirandi Toma Iwe Yungishifa Yoku Pikiramo Igelefem Media House. Ngwe 23 Meneha Uka Kombanga Nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimopo iwe moe programa detu. Moambo lengera selma konara heta tuimu. Datu datu heari hamano tano owa miyaji. Igele FM, do aya.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludwitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Onthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights for freedom of expression without fear
My friend,
or favor.
Why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you...
Welcome back. The time is 14 minutes in the of 7 o'clock. Now, to move on to the next item, my colleague David Shombe interviewed economist Solomon Ipingi about the USA trade war and the lessons Namibia can learn from increased tariff. We might take a listen to this update.
Yes, dear listeners, we are continuing with Early Morning Scoop. We are looking at international trade. We are looking at imposition of trade tariffs to African countries and also to other, you know, countries in the world, particularly by the United States of America. And we are looking at what is the cause of this, you know, trade war? What are some of the sectors which are going to be impacted? And for us to unpack this, I got into the conversation with consumer analyst and economist by the name Salomo Ipinge, just to engage us on the studio and to give us his view on this trade war. Mr. Salomo Ipinge, good morning and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
A very good morning to you, David. Thank you for having me on your Early Morning Scoop program, and a good morning to all the Early Scoop Morning program.
Yes, let us look into it. Let us look at trade war. What is the motivation of this trade war, and what is the impact of trade war to Namibian economy, particularly when you are looking at the imposition of 21% tariffs to Namibian product which are imported to the United States of America?
Yeah, in my view, really, as far as what is the cause, it could have been what has happened in the in the last few years, where a lot of African countries are collaborating with other Western countries other than US to establish its own economy and to move away from dependency of the United States economy / currency.
Yeah.
As we know that the United States had an election taking place now, which Donald Trump has won that election. And really the United States' recent decision to impose a sweeping 21% tariff would definitely negatively impact Namibia's export earnings by disrupting established supply chain, decreasing the competitiveness of goods export from Namibia to U.S., and it's also impairing the Namibian beef and fish export ability to compete to the U.S. market. I really, really do think that it would have an impact on an ongoing, since we are coming from a supply chain that we already designed without any of this tariff, and this tariff will definitely impact the economy negatively on the go.
Yes, let us look at, because you have mentioned about the beef sector and also other sector which are going to be impacted. Let us look at from an Indian perspective, because I was reading it, one of the statements from the Minister of International Relations and Trade, and they said they are coming up with strategies. What do you think should be done, particularly by Namibia, in order for the country to navigate through this trade war?
Right. I think also some of the main sectors that would heavily be affected in this situation would in your uranium and diamond business individuals, which I feel forms the largest part of exportation that we have done to America, and having regard that, and I do love the confidence of the minister that you've just alluded to right now, is that this really is an opportunity where Namibians should really, or not should, but must promote political participation in streamlining business operations, in trying to reduce its government debt, opening up new financial markets, attracting new foreign direct investment, facilitating technologies transfer, building of human capital, which is very, very important. The very important aspect of the economy is the human capital, and I think that's where the government should really shift its focus on and overall improve the good governance in order to achieve its potential success in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of speculation, particularly from analysts and also some of trade experts, to say shifting to the east is a solution. What do you think about this?
Could you just repeat the question?
Shifting to the to the east, like Namibia prioritizing the eastern part, like China, Russia, and other countries, when this imposition of tariffs is impacting them.
I think this is the most beautiful thing for Namibia to do, that, you know, we start creating new allies. I mean, we have created an allies with US. It might have not been the best idea. Here they are pulling out all of a sudden, but I think diversifying our allies and interacting and interlinking with other Eastern nations and countries is the most fantastic thing. Never regarding that we as African countries as well should interlink and create allies within our African continent. But I think it is the best approach to just explore different allies of market, of the markets. I think this is really the best thing to do at this point in time, especially when we see the actions that the United States is undertaking right now.
Yes, let us look at diplomatic solutions, particularly from the economic diplomacy perspective. Do you think Namibia can do something from the diplomatic front to make sure that they reduce the burden, or maybe negotiate their own terms to lower the tariffs that is imposed by the U.S.? What do you think in terms of diplomacy?
Absolutely. I think the diplomatic entrusted individuals have the capacity and are able to enter into negotiations. And I think we should not take this thing with an emotional attachment to it, because everyone within their own household can make rules and can impose rules within their households, but people are always able to sit around the table and negotiate meaningful and reasonable terms in continuation of trading. I always say that a people is a people because of people, whether you are pink, red, white, black, Maroon, we are all a people and we need each other. We cannot separate each other. And I do really believe that from the perspective of the diplomatics that they play, the role, which they are entrusted and which we believe that they have the capacity, to be able to achieve these goals, that they sit around the table, that the trade does not stop in its entirety. It continues, but in terms that are reasonable, and amicably, agreed upon.
Yes, lastly, let us look at, you know, we have received a lot of news, complaints from various leaders in Africa and also, you know, different parts of the world. Let us look particularly in Africa because we have a tendency of too much depending on other countries. What can we do? What can we learn from this to make sure that in the future we stand on our own economy and we can survive without, you know, the assistance or the, you know, depending on too much on other countries?
It's really about time, and it's that highway that as African countries, and I think I mentioned it briefly but not really paying emphasis earlier on, is to say that it's about time that we as African countries unite and become one and create platforms that are open to every national or to every national, where we open up systems, routes, and ways of inter-export importing between the African countries. And I think this is really where we need to start. While we are still building our Eastern and our different allies and so forth, African leaders should really, really come together in unity in ensuring that they streamline systems of inter-export import amongst ourselves. And I do believe that there is a need because different countries have got different minerals, get different resources, and we can use all of that. And hence, I mentioned earlier on capitalizing on human resources, where especially in the youth, where the youth are adequately trained and that they've got adequate support, whether financially, whether educationally, whether training, and so forth, that we are able to produce quality products, quality goods, to be able to import and export amongst all African nationals.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Salomo Ibinge, for joining us this morning. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me on your show today, Mr. David. You must enjoy your day ahead.
All right, cool.
All right, it's 25 minutes in the of 7 o'clock. We have about 5 minutes to close over. Now, to move on to the next item, or the last one is actually during the Independence Day celebration in the Mbongo constituency, Minister of Works and Transport, Aveiko Nekundi, expressed his commitment to ensuring that all schools and clinics are connected to accessible roads network. Now, in response to community feedback, officials confirmed that the construction of a 7-kilometer road to Silikunga will proceed as requested by the residents. We might take a listen to what more the minister has to say.
Engineering public infrastructure, improving service delivery, creating jobs, and building resilient communities was echoed as a national priority. Comrades, Councillor, in my first meeting with my staff members of the Ministry of Works and Transport, which I did on the 8th of April this year, I have given a policy directive. Two policy directives. One is that any project that is under the Ministry of Roads and Transport every third of the employment people must be employed from that locality in which the project is being executed.
The people must not only see the project, but must feel the project through participation, direct participation. Two, if we are building a road in any locality, one third of the subcontractors must be from that locality when the project is being executed. Equally so, the executives of that local committees have no capacity to directly participate in subcontractors. It's a matter of the past, because the president, the appointing authority, has given a marching order that I must make sure any knowledge, any skill gap with our subcontractors, SMEs, I must make sure that it's imparted to them so they directly participate in such projects. And I'm again saying, I have no appointment to fail in that task, as entrusted to me by Excellency, the President of the Republic of Namibia. As we celebrate here in Congo, we must be counted in acknowledging the persistent development challenges in this region. The Kavango West region, indeed, is in need of critical infrastructure upgrades and service expansion, amongst the most pressing needs. The upgrades and expansion of roads to connect remote communities and facilitate trade and mobility, electrification of schools, villages and government institutions in underserved areas like Rundugona, Sindondora, Katwiti, Simanya and others.
There you heard it from the Minister of Works and Transport, Aveko Nekundi. And now that marks our last update of the day. Thank you so much for tuning in and enjoy the rest of your week. And from me, Lois Oshimi, it's a very good day. I'll be handing over to my colleague, Tate Michael Shaveri, to take you through the unpacking of the day. Thank you so much.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lodritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Onthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? Either a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my candidature manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in candidature. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff. Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba. that brings together various hymn books under one app, here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsi Nehangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Selfwoord Tierra, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-235-8063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.